to Beyond the Ring, a podcast that covers all things in the stock show industry from the informative to the insane, starring Ryan Rash.
The greatest argument against human evolution is a YouTube or social media comment thread.
And Dale Hummel.
Your actions and words should always agree with each other.
Now on with the show.
Welcome to Beyond the Ring. This is Dale Hummel, along with co-star Ryan Rash.
Hello, hello, hello.
Is it sunny?
It is sunny, and this is inhibiting my drink by color day.
Drink by color day.
Mm-hmm.
I'm confused.
Callie shouts out a color, and we find a drink of that color, and then we move to another color, and another color, and another color.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Ryan is in the Bahamas, for those of you that may not be following him on social media. Ryan, I strongly encourage you to do the shark dive. Encourage you.
Callie says this to know.
I think they have them on a regular basis there. They're black tip sharks, or they're not deadly from what I can tell. Okay. Most of them. Sure. But I hope you're enjoying your vacation time. It is overcast, storming, not good here in Illinois, and I hope the internet service holds up just a little bit longer to get through this session.
Mm-hmm.
I do have a topic I would like to discuss in maybe a little more detail than normal on current events, if that's allowed.
Go right ahead.
Since Joe's been the president, you and I have brought up on this podcast many times, we asked the question, why would he do this? Why would he allow the border to be wide open? Why would he pull out of Afghanistan stand the way he did? Why does he do a lot of things? Why is he forgiving all the student loans? Why are we pushing electric vehicles so hard? All of these things, and obviously most of them I would attribute, and I apologize for all the thunder in the background, attribute to the far left agenda. Could you agree with that?
That's the only rational solution.
Yeah, it's puzzled both of us, correct? We wouldn't this have normally been somewhat suicidal for a candidate or a party to do some of these things?
You would think.
So it hit me last night, and I did not sleep well once it hit me. What if, and this is, you're going to call my tin hat call, whatever you want to call. So there is no question he's pushed the boundaries further on some of these things than any president in my recent history that I can recall. And these particular decisions would normally be very detrimental to the president and the party in the next election. We hope they are. We have discussed the quick turnover in terms of social media and our news cycle, that we tend to forget things very quickly. And I think that lends a little bit to the fact that maybe they can get away with it to a certain degree. But most of these things would have been absolutely detrimental and done over with in the past, to the point there's no chance. We both agree, everybody that listened to this podcast agrees, that his cognitive ability is minimal. It's probably gotten worse since he took office, but it wasn't good when he started in office. What if the Dems decided, okay, we've got somebody that doesn't know up from down. Either we put him in office, or once he was in office, this was decided. Let's push every far left crazy ass idea that we've wanted to get through in this administration during his time in office. And they clearly have done just that. So it almost makes Joe the sacrificial goat. And we can say, okay, he was responsible for A, B, C, D, and E. He was delusional. In other words, the party turns on him. Do you see the party turning on him?
I think the party has already turned on him.
Yes, and I see it more and more. The anti-Israel protests, who's funding those? Have you heard that?
No.
Soros and my governor, Pritzker.
Oh.
So these are some of the largest donors to the Democrat Party. And clearly, they're pushing the anti-Israel protests. The money leads back to them. They're chanting Genocide Joe. I mean, this every protest out there is negative towards Joe. They're not saying they're pushing some other candidate. They're just beating up on Joe for being too friendly to Israel, hurting his public opinion even further than where it's at. So they have turned on him. Ryan, what if this was a master plan to bring all the illegals in that they possibly can? And I don't know how many million it is at right now. What if it was a plan to push the green initiative further than anyone ever has in the past? What if it was a plan to buy the vote of many young Americans with college loans? All of these things, and we can keep going and add all these up. And then all of a sudden, as a Democrat party, once these have gotten through, let's disassociate from Joe and all the stuff he's pushed through so we don't commit suicide in the fall election. This would be replacing Joe, as you and I have talked about, possibly with the Governor Newsom. And if this was a strategically thought out, orchestrated event, let's get everything through right now. We can blame it on delusional Joe. We can throw him under the bus, get away from him, put a new candidate in place. And all of a sudden, the next time that the Dems own the White House, the House of Representatives and the Senate, all of those people that came across the border, guess what they become? Voters. And it can happen if they control all three of those places. So if this was truly orchestrated, and once, whether it was prior to Joe getting in office or once he was there and realized that you've got somebody incoherent as a president, a vice president that may be coherent but knows absolutely nothing, crazy, insane, lack of intelligence from a common sense perspective, and we can get all these things done, that is brilliant on their part. I hope I'm wrong, but if this was truly orchestrated and they're throwing him under the bus to trade him out at the last minute, blame all these wild left ideas on him and come back in with somebody that they throw up there, set up there as, I don't know, a little more moderate. I don't believe your boyfriend out in California is maybe the one to do it, but his presence and ability to speak is amazing. I hope I'm giving the Democrats too much credit here, but it will play out here in the next few months. Crazy theory?
That's a lot to process.
That's a lot. And I apologize. I probably didn't explain it as well as I could, but I truly am worried they've pushed Joe to take all these. I don't even think Joe knows what he's doing, so it wasn't hard to do. But they pushed everything through they wanted to go through, and now they turn on him and bring somebody else in so they don't take the heat for it. It was brilliant if this was the case. I hope the Dems aren't that intelligent.
Well, my point in all this, what you're saying, I get what you're saying, but A, they're running out of time. Like, the convention is in August. It's a couple months away. Like, people are already talking, like, they want them to move it out of Chicago, and they say, we can't turn back now, all this other stuff. So I have said and continue to say that the longer they wait, if they're going to switch him out, the worse off they're going to be, because you can't force that on somebody, because basically you have taken away half of the country's ability to choose a candidate. If they just say Joe's out and here is your new Democrat nominee for president, no one had a say in that. So who decides that? And I don't think anybody left, right, middle, conservative, moderate, whatever you want to call him. I think the fundamental thing about choosing who you want to be your candidate is something that resonates with everybody. So I think they're running out of time if they're going to switch him out.
So I agree completely that taking away half the country's input on who they would like as their nominee would normally not fly at all. But I think the environment is so ripe for it. There's so much dislike, even on the left, for Joe at this point because of all the crazy shit that he's done, and such a hatred on the left for Trump. At this point, I think not only would they not be upset about their right being taken away at convention, but they would celebrate it, that we've got a candidate in there that can win. We can defeat Trump. All of these things can come into play. And normally, I would say almost impossible to pull something like that off. But right now, the environment is just about perfect for it. And I think they wait all the way to convention. They're not too late on throwing Joe under the bus. That's been happening. So he can come out with a health issue that he says, hey, I can't do this. There's many reasons that we can bring into play that they switch him out. And at this point, I think the majority of the Dems are going to give up that right to nominate that person to get somebody else in that position. I may be wrong, but this is one of the only times in history I think it would work.
Well, I guess we'll see shortly.
I am scared to death if they do, Ryan, that the Dems will come out and have more a larger voter turnout than we've ever seen because of the hatred of Trump, because of somebody like your boyfriend out in California. His ability to present himself is very, very strong. And the less time they have to understand how he's taking California and put it in the toilet, the better. So I do not know. I really do not know.
We shall see, as they say.
So I have had the question. I was actually out at a show again this weekend, Ryan. I've been out in public a lot, like, for me.
Yes, I'm very well aware.
And you're enjoying the sunny Bahamas. I'm in the middle of a hailstorm in Illinois. Next week, I don't know for sure if we're recording while Chase and I are in Namibia. I don't know how that's going to work out, but I've had a few people ask me about that trip and just how expensive something like that was. Ryan, you could probably address this better than anybody. Do you think I spent a lot of money for Chase and I to go to Africa?
I think you spent more than you probably spent on any other trip, but y'all don't understand. He does not spend money. It's against his religion.
And you see, and that's the crazy thing. And we've taken many family trips to Thailand, and we enjoy going to different places. But for example, when we'd go to Thailand, we'd get airfare between $600 and $800. And the cost while we're there is a fraction of it here in the U.S. In the Africa trip, I think the airfare was close to $1,500. So high airfare. We rent a nice camping/SUV off-road vehicle. When we get there at the airport, they pick us up. We get the vehicle. And we have no real destination. We're just going. And we do have two lodges booked. I think they were close to $200 a night for two nights. We're there for, I believe, eight nights, the lodges, so we can get Wi-Fi to maybe record this podcast and get a shower. But for the most part, we're paying just under $100 a day for the vehicle, a couple hundred dollars for two lodges, two nights. There is no expense. It's relatively cheap, Ryan. You are invited along if you would like.
Yeah, I'm not going because, one, I have no desire to do any of that. Two, I sent you the video of the great white shark in the cage where you're going in. That, like, you need to check your Facebook Messenger. I sent you that video. Number three, this whole sleeping on top of the car situation, because that's going to keep you safe from the animals. There are animals the size of the car, and I don't know if you realize this, lions do jump.
I am fully aware of that. We will take safety precautions. That will be good. I was more concerned about just people in danger and things like that. But after research, Namibia is the least dense population of any country in Africa. So I think we can be gone for days off-road without seeing anybody. So that standpoint's fine. I think the animal side, well, I think we're okay. I think we're good.
What about gas?
We have what they call jerry cans, basically large gas cans that we can pack into the back of the SUV. So we have quite a bit. I'm going to have extra ones of those. I thought about renting a satellite phone and a GPS. That is possible. But you want to know what they want for a satellite phone? It's like 30 or 40 bucks a day.
Yeah, that's probably a wise investment.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I'm excited about that trip. And hopefully, Ryan, I don't remember. I can look up what nights we're at a lodge and hopefully that there's Wi-Fi there. I really am not sure, but then we can record from there. If not, you're on your own, pal. On your own. Do you have any other current events? Are there anything current going on in the Bahamas that we need to know about?
Not that I'm aware of.
Was it safe going to the airport?
There's lots of things going on in the Bahamas, but I do not think that you would appreciate me talking about what is going on in the Bahamas on the podcast. I'm just saying.
You are correct. Do you have any BTR JLA news?
Well, before we get to that, like, you haven't even touched on the Trump trial.
I haven't. You're right. I almost block it out. It's the most unconstitutional situation I've ever encountered.
So, and I'm not going to get into it because it's all a sham, and I do not think he's going to be convicted or anything like that.
I am not positive of that yet.
I am. I don't think you followed enough. Like, their own witnesses, like the defense, the idiot DA's witnesses that he calls are telling them he's wrong. But
I agree with all of that. Any sensible jury, and you filed the jury selection better than I am afraid, and I hope there's 1, 2, 3, I don't care how many, there is such a deep hatred for Trump that it doesn't matter what's presented for most of those jurors. I know we only need one to stop it all, but I hope they're there.
My thing is, the craziest thing to me is there's this gag order, and Trump's been found guilty of violating the gag order, I think now 10 times. And so the judge says the other day, Trump comes in and I guess he violates the gag order again or whatever. But Trump's saying that they're taking away his constitutional right to defend himself and he can't talk about all this. And so the judge says the other day that he says that the $1,000 fines on this gag order are not working. And so he says, I realize that you are a former president and probably the future president, so I don't want to have to put you in jail, but I will. So this judge basically said he knows that Trump's going to be reelected and he don't want to put him in jail, but he's going to. It's going to be great. Great.
See, I thought he said possibly, not probably, the next president, but I did not follow it very close.
He said probably.
And then the pundits come on and explain the three different phases of government, just judicial, legislative, and how the executive as well, and how this is the judicial side and it has to come into play and all this crap. And it is so much crap, Ryan. I do try to avoid even listening to it. What do you think would happen? And I don't think Trump's going to shut up about, I don't think he's going to adhere to the gag order. And if he does not, do you believe the judge?
I think he wants this man to put him in jail. I believe he.
Don't you think that helps his polls?
Oh, through the roof. It's over. They can run Gavin, whoever else they want to. I don't care. They put him in jail. It's so over. Like,
I would think that would not be a positive thing for the Dems.
Yeah, like, they're going to have to. The Democrat, whoever is in charge of the Democrat, they need to call the judge up and be like, okay, you cannot do this, but I just want to.
You see, we always ask whoever's in charge. I think it's the Soros, the Pritzkers. I think it's the big donors that pull the strings. I have been caught up in a legislative battle here in Illinois. And it's amazing to me that those elected for as our representatives in the House and Senate, in my opinion, do very little to make law. It's more about the lobbyists that control them that are donating to them. And I'm sure there's nothing, this is no different on the large scale. So I think you always hear about this, follow the money. But I don't believe our politicians out in Washington are doing anything different than what their big donors want them to do. And it's absolutely ridiculous.
So I just wanted to bring that up. But back to...
So just for a prediction, do you believe Trump will end up in jail or no?
I can't imagine him doing that. Like, I mean,
I think he's smart enough to do it. I think he's smart enough to do it or keep pushing it. And if he can get away with keep pushing on it without going, that worked for him as well. There's no downside for him to not keep pushing it.
Oh, no. I'm just saying I can't imagine the judge actually putting him in jail. Like, I think that would be literally political suicide for the whole Democratic Party. Like, that's why I'm saying I just can't imagine him doing that. But.
So how does it not happen when the judge is already, when it's been put out there so formally and in absolute by the judge that if we continue, this is what happens. How does the judge not do it if Trump continues to ignore the gag order?
That I can't tell you. I don't know. I don't know what happens next, but
yeah, I think they backed themselves in the corner.
Yeah.
And I hope Trump takes advantage of it.
Well, I want to thank Leonard Truck and Trailer for being a huge BTRJLA sponsor for the past 3 years. At Leonard Truck and Trailer, we are dedicated to providing the best service, selection, and value. Our efforts are focused on meeting and exceeding our customers' expectations every single day because we know that our continued success relies on our ability to satisfy our customers. Leonard Truck and Trailer is committed to being your one-stop trailer source with the largest selection of trailers in the nation, on-the-spot financing, custom vinyl, in-house warranty, and parts and service department all there at the place. It is apparent why Leonard Truck and Trailer has proven to be the only place that you need to go for all your trailer needs. So thank you to the Leonard family and Leonard Truck and Trailer for being a BTR JLA sponsor for the past 3 years. And I am going to read the top 10 senior hogs. Currently, top 10 senior hog winner is Sadie Vino of California. Second is Jenna Freitas of California. Third is Landon Thomas of Utah. Fourth, Ryder Lloyd, Utah. Fifth, Jessalyn Maggerly of Oregon. Next is Caitlin Kirby of Texas, followed by Madison Fall of Oregon. Brody Casto of Oregon. Ninth is Madison Ross of Ohio. And 10th is Hayden Sherman of Roy City, Texas.
Congratulations. A little West Coast, maybe a little Southern, but not bad. I would like to extend a special thank you to our good friends at ShowFresh H2O for their continued support of this podcast. Give ShowFresh H2O a try next time you're in transit or at a show. Low cost with high return. ShowFresh H2O can be purchased at your local farm store, show supply trailer, or at swampfox.com. Are you ready, Ryan?
I am.
Put me in, coach. Who came up with that?
This would be me.
Oh, that is correct. Explain what that means, please.
I just want to talk about all things coaching kids how to show at home, ringside, camps, etc., because I do think that coaching is important and a part of it. And I've been showing my whole entire life. And I'm telling you, when I show an open show to this day, I will still look up at somebody to make sure that it looks right from the judge's perspective. And so I'm not against coaching. I don't want anybody to think I am. I do think there are some things that we need to do a little better in the areas of it all, but I believe in coaching. I think it helps both at home and when it's actual go time. And there are lots of camps dedicated to learning showmanship skills and all that other stuff. And I'm just going to say, as far as the camps go, I am not going to publicly on this podcast condone or, you know, say this is the one you need to go to or this is the one you don't need to go to. But if you want that information, then just contact me privately and I will tell you there. But I'm not going to do that on this podcast.
And how? What is the best way to reach out to you?
Text.
And we need a phone number.
They can find it. It's listed lots of places.
I can pull it up if you'd like.
And it's listed lots of places.
Okay. Please continue. And I like this idea. I love this idea. And the fact that you came out and said you will look up, I don't know if it's Callie or whoever is at the open show, and just kind of get a thumbs up that that things look good. And there's no question. I'm going to say 99, I'm going to use you as the guinea pig here. 99% of the time, I'm going to guess that you're in good shape because you've been in the ring as many times as anybody out there. And each time you just get it. It's there. And there's a lot of people out there, juniors out there that absolutely get it. They've been in the ring so much. But sometimes you're going to look a little different from away. So it's good to get that thumbs up. Would you say with time, and I don't know if you use you as an example or just in the shows judging all these kids, there's a certain percentage of them that just get it and they're going to be pretty darn good without anybody from the outside?
No, I think there is. And like I said, I think there's probably a large population of the kids that show that probably don't need anyone to tell them if they're right, wrong, or indifferent. But I also think within that population of the kids, there's still somebody over there telling them. And I'm perfectly fine with that. I think that's part of it. I think that's good. Because the one thing that I think it is very hard for a lot of people to grasp, whether you are when you are a showman, is you are at the head of that animal, whether it's a sheep, goat, whatever, cattle, and the judge has a different perspective. And that's where normally the coach is at the same perspective as that judge. And things do look differently on that side than they do your side. And that is the one thing about coaching at home I think we forget is it's got to be a two-person process. One, a kid can set that animal up 900 times a day at home, and that's great, and that's wonderful. But if there's not somebody there with you on the other side where the judge would be saying, yeah, that's exactly how it needs to look, then you're probably not getting going to be as effective as you need to be.
I think early on, you're getting the animal acclimated to your commands and acclimated to you. So you, to a certain degree, we're building up to that process. But absolutely, and some will get in front of a mirror and they can use their own opinion. It's not the same maybe as having somebody off at a distance, but absolutely. And I can assure you, whether it's my kids and just to for full transparency, my kids or families that we're helping, myself or Craig or Tara or even Katie will be ringside, and we will give some guidance. In most cases, I try to follow my own words, but as a parent or somebody that's trying to help an individual that's out there that you've been working with, it's you have to reel in a little bit, and you have to use some self-discipline, because it's hard not to constantly wanting to just make those little changes. And I am the first one to tell these exhibitors, if we're 95% there and it's an animal that's not the most cooperative, we probably just need to leave it alone. Stop right there. But parents and coaches, including myself from outside the ring, sometimes we get a little carried away. Ryan, let's go down the path of the overcoaching on the sideline to the distraction point. Have you ever experienced that?
Oh, every show. And
not every show.
Oh yeah, every show.
Oh,
but
my.
I witness it at shows that I attend to, but especially when I am judging, and I think this is kind of I've made this situation because I have repeated on here 9,000 times that I hate it when people, you know, ride their animals into the ring and all this other stuff. So while I think people have kind of figured that out and that I don't like it, so then they take the coaching part on the sidelines to the extreme, so that way they can think that they're signaling me that that's the animal they're attached to without, you know, following it into the gate. It's still annoying, but I think that's why I see it maybe more than most. There is that happens at every show where someone is way too animated or yelling at the kid or all this other stuff on what they need to do and how they need to get it done. And I think it's distracting for the judge. I think it's distracting for the showman, the other showman, and the other people watching the show. So I think that is something that we need to take into consideration. And because of that, normally it is when somebody's yelling, get the top down or front foot back or all this other stuff. And so I think that while I condone coaching, I don't condone that type of coaching. And ever, like, the coaches that are effective ringside to me are the ones that have a system and they have signals and like the feet are numbered. I don't care which, I'm not going to say, you know, this one has to be 1, 2, 3, 4, but you and that kid. And when I was brokering steers, I had to make sure that, like, we didn't have a set deal. Peyton Herzog may have had a different numbering system than Callie Ellis, etc. And I had to be mindful of that. But feet are numbered. There was a signal for getting the top down or the belly up, pushing the head out, all this other stuff. And they were subtle. It was, you know, one back or, you know, and you do fingers, you don't talk. And that way, it's not distracting to anybody. It is subtle, all of those things. And I think everybody should probably try to get a signal system with their exhibitor of some point. And I think doing that, I have absolutely no problem with. When we're hanging over the fence, we're yelling out instructions, all this other stuff, I think that is what gives coaching a black eye or a bad name, because there's some people like, I'll never coach my kid. Well, you're lying. You will at some point. But that's just my take on it.
No, you nailed it right there. It's a distraction. I think an effective coach, Ryan, is those that are that are out there. And as a judge, I am unaware that they're even coaching. And as the showman in the ring that they're coaching, also unaware that they're seeking the assistance.
Exactly.
Of that. And when you can be that efficient through your signals, exactly what Ryan's talking about, that is ideal. My biggest pet peeve in the ring is when we have a showman out there, and I'm not blaming the showman, I'm blaming the coaches, the parents, whoever it may be. When that exhibitor is so focused on their coach, they lose all sense of ring awareness, all sense of where I'm at, all sense that maybe we're moving livestock into place or going to walk. They're focused so much on that coach, they're not looking at anything else. That bothers me. It does. And again, I'm not blaming the showman, but rather who's ever on the outside coaching, overdoing things that stay focused on me. And I'm sure you run into this weekly. Is probably,
oh yeah, no, and it is. And I think in those situations where you can clearly tell that the kid is looking more to the sidelines of the ring than actually paying attention to what's going on, and I may be off on that in some things, but for the most part in those situations, I think that kid is scared. If they don't,
yes,
then they're going to be blamed. Or, you know, whatever, all this other stuff. So they've got their attention focused on whoever the coach is. And talking about that, that's not good. And I think that's another thing that gives the whole art of coaching a black eye, like I said. One other point in this is whether you are the showman or you are the coach, when the judge is there at that animal, probably looking at that particular animal, that is probably not the time for the kid to look over to the coach or the coach to give signals. You need to do it before or after.
And why would we want to, let's say we're showing a lamb or a goat and we're going to reach back and set a leg while the judge is looking because a coach has told them to do so? What happens? Not all the time. Some kids are good enough they can get away with it. More times than not, when they go to reach back and grab a leg, what happens to that front end and that animal?
Well, the whole setup, the whole silhouette is broken. I mean, because you're physically moving and all this other stuff. And so when you do that, you're going to be able to spot the flaws and the issues on the animal a lot easier. And so that's why I thought we need to bring that up. Probably when the judge is analyzing your animal is not the time for the coach or the exhibitor to, like, communicate with each other.
Even from an exhibitor standpoint, and I hope you have enough, those that have enough ring awareness to know the judge is kind of focused in on you studying things, and you think there's one foot that's out of place or something's not quite right, unless you can move it and there's going to be almost zero disruption of that silhouette, which is unusual, but if you can, that's fine. Or if it's just so out of whack, we just have to fix it, period. We don't have a choice. But if we're 90% there and we're thinking about moving that hind leg a half inch while the judge is looking, that's probably a terrible idea. Terrible idea. It just, and I don't judge as much as I used to, and I don't get out there that much, but still every time I get out there, I will see this happen that I'm focused in on one. And I think sometimes maybe that exhibitor feels like, oh my gosh, he's studying mine. I better go make it perfect right now. And I'm not trying to be negative. I think it's to your advantage to leave it alone if you're close.
Yeah. And I think you said something earlier about 95% is probably good in most instances. And I think that is true. And that is coming from someone who is a perfectionist. And I don't ever want it to be 95%. I want it to be 100%. And so I think that is something that, you know, is been very hard for me to have to, like, understand both as an exhibitor and a coach. But yeah, I get it. But I don't understand the point of when the judge is there analyzing, the coach yelling at the kid or the kid looking over there, you need to have your attention focused on the judge when they're putting their attention focused on you.
And if you are 95% there, the time to fix it, to attempt to get to 100% is when the judge is to the other end of the arena, not looking at you.
Yes.
And this to me seems very, very simple. It seems like common sense, especially for coaches to understand that. And I think showmen for the most part can get it as well, but it's not implemented in the ring near as much as what I would think it would be. And so that is something I want you to hit home on. If you're going to make those minor adjustments and you're already pretty darn close, let's do it when the judge is not focused on you. And I don't think we can go over this nearly enough to get that to hit home, but it's there. Ryan, what's one of the things you hear from the ringside when you're judging a pig show, especially on the younger kids? What's the outside parents and coaches yelling all the time?
I say this a lot in pig showmanship, and like it is every show you will hear somebody yell to someone, drive at him, drive at him, drive at him. And when I say this in showmanship, I said, that's the absolute wrong thing to tell a child.
Don't drive a pig at me right now. Said, do not.
Because you can see nothing when the pig is at your feet. I mean, literally, like they're like, drive at him, drive at him, drive at him. When they're that close, you can see nothing on the animal when they're at your feet. And especially if Dale's judging, if you drive straight at him, then he's going to see the piggy's front feet, and he doesn't think any of the piggy's front feet are good enough. So that's a bad idea. What they should be yelling is get out from the pack or whatever. Because the really great hog showmen are the ones that separate themselves out from the other six hogs in the ring, and they're over here in this area by themselves at a distance where you can analyze everything you need to analyze on that hog instead of being in the group of five over here that are trying to drive through the judge's legs. So, yeah.
Absolutely. And I hear that. I hear get out of the corner. You hear lots of different things. Look at the judge. I hear that almost all the time. And I'm good with that. Remember, we just talked about make sure to not stare at your coach the whole time. Be aware. I guess ring awareness to me encompasses looking at the judge, understanding when the judge is going to be focusing on you, when the judge will be there to handle, when you're going to get ready to move out and make a lap. All of those things come into play there. Now, I want to go to the other side of it. And I think there's a happy space in there on how much you want to look at the judge versus make sure that we still have the animal in place and we have a ring awareness of what's going on around us. All of those things where if we're focused strictly on our coach, we can become blind to the judge and anything going on in the ring. If we're so intensely focused on just looking at the judge, irregardless of the species, you may have that animal just a little bit moved a leg or something that you didn't catch. And hopefully you can do that without having to see it happen. You can feel it or whatever it may be. Or even when you're driving a hog that you're studying that judge so much, you're staring right at him. You're not finding that. You're not thinking ahead. Where's the next place I need to be that might be an open hole that might give me, I guess, that shot to let him see my animal on its own, just cruising across the ring. So I want those showmen to look at the judge and be aware for the most part as a part of the ring awareness. So we know when we're going to move. We know when the judge is going to be focused on you. We know when the judge is going to be there to handle. We don't have to have the judge walk up to us and say, hey, we're pulling you in. You're looking at me and I can signal for you to come into a third or fourth place or whatever it may be. And we don't have to physically go over there and say, hey, we need to bring yours in. Those things are all just convenience and polite and intelligent things to do as a showman. If you're so focused in on the judge, I do fear that we're missing some of those other things. And Ryan, tell me where you're at. And we're gonna get off topic, and it's okay. The real, real intense, and I see it as much in the swine side, I see it a little bit in the sheep and goat side, but that intense, absolute stare. Don't look at anything but stare down the judge 99% of the time when you're driving that hog.
I think whether you are whatever species you're showing, I think I really like intensity in children. I think it's good. I appreciate it. I am very intense when I show, always was. And so I probably have a greater appreciation for intensity more than others. I have caught myself a lot in terms of showmanship, especially girls. And this is not being sexist, but I go up to that girl and I say, you know what? You do a great job of really riding that line of where you are super intense, but you don't come across as possessed or like you want to eat me or you're angry. And I think that is hard. I think it's very hard. And girls normally do a better job of it than boys do. But there are those times where a lot of judges in showmanship will just be like, you look mad, you look angry, or, you know, you're just too intense, all this other stuff. I guess that I have a greater appreciation for that than some people do because of my own upbringing, the own way I show, etc. But I get it and I understand it. I think that that's probably one of the hardest things to either coach or learn is where that line is that you are as intense as you can be without making the judge uncomfortable with the way that you look on your face.
Agreed completely. I think that was very, very well put. And I love intensity. I want to see that person that comes in the ring that wants to win. And that's part of it. To me, it's a fine line. I want to see that person that is competitive, that is confident, without going to the intense portion where it's maybe distracting for the judge, or we're simply not aware of everything else because we're so focused just on the judge. I like intensity, and I'm going to reword it, intensity of ring awareness, understanding everything that's going on with still that competitive, I want to win. I've got a good one. I want to get along well in this class type of look. And Ryan, you described it so well. That's a fine line there. And I will have some come in that are so dead focused on me, they have no idea what else is going on. I'll have others come in that can be that focused and still get it and get around. So it's interesting to me. I guess part of those things, and I don't mean to pick on the swine showman, part of that intensity or desire to win, sometimes we have body language that is supposed to indicate that. What about when we kink our head and tuck our chin all the way into our shoulder to the point where it almost looks uncomfortable and we do not move that the entire time we're out there? That to me, I get it gives a signal of intensity, but it doesn't make sense. I'm more about making sense. And Ryan, I'm going to bring up something that you're going to go off on, and I hope you do. When I'm talking about the kink neck in the pig showman, I'm okay with it a little bit, but when it goes to the real extreme and we just don't, no matter where we're at in the ring or what we're doing, it does not move. It's like the neck is broken. The same thing, and I understand this is popular, and Ryan and I have talked about this, and it's fresh in my mind just from a couple weekends ago, and I did not have many, but the pig bounce, the showman bounce that Ryan has mentioned on here so many times, I don't know if I don't call it intensity, Ryan. I think that's maybe...
It's called ludicrousy.
I don't know what it's called. But when that pig stops moving and the child is still bouncing, I understand. We've seen people do it that have won. I get it. But I can't tell you, and Ryan's been on here about it because he's out there sorting pig shows all the time. And I'm sure it's different for different judges. But for me, it is one of the larger distractions.
It is the most distracting thing in a hog show.
And maybe that's just maybe it's just you and I, because I don't hear judges, any other judges talk
Cade,
about it on the microphone.
Cade has.
Yes. So I want everything to be done for a purpose, and that serves zero purpose.
Bouncing does no purpose. None. Other than looking like an idiot.
I did research.
And I don't know what coach came up with that, but whoever it is, those people need to be shot in the kneecap.
I researched the history of that. And I did get some information. I'm not going to throw any names out there, but it concerns me.
That person needs to be shot in the kneecap.
I cannot argue with that whatsoever. It just is insane. And I understand why some kids do this. And this takes me into another portion of the coaching / showmanship and ring awareness, all of those things. I can't emphasize enough that please, please do things for a purpose. Don't do it because you just saw somebody else do it, that whether it served a purpose or not, or if you don't understand the purpose, don't do it. Make sure that everything you do is with an intentional reason. There's logical reason behind it. And when we go into that, and I talk about this in showmanship when I'm out there, be careful. because I'm making a recommendation on what I like in showmanship doesn't mean the judge next week is going to like that. Nor should you listen to that judge from 2 weeks ago that said, hey, I want you flipping sides on that lamb or goat every time I go to that other side, period, whether you're bracing or not or whatever it is, because you're going to come into Ryan and I, and if you've got that thing stuck and we casually walk to the other side for whatever reason, we don't expect you to flip. I mean, if we're looking
at the front view
or something, yeah.
I do not.
Because that moment that you're going from one side to the other, you're taking a risk that that silhouette and that animal's not going to look good. It's going to go backwards on you. And I know sometimes it doesn't. But there are some judges that are going to absolutely want you to do that. So with that said, coaches and showmen alike, remember, each judge has their own personal opinion on how they want showmanship done. Just because you hear a judge say this or that doesn't mean the next one's going to be that way. Continue to do what you do. Take guidance from those that are giving you their personal opinions and try to work through it. If you go to the ring and watch that first showmanship class or watch how that the ring mechanics are working, and you get an idea that this judge does or doesn't like that, you can either hold your moral ground and say, I'm not changing for this judge. Well, good luck. You're probably not going to get along. If you want to do well, I don't have a problem with you going out there and maybe trying to adjust to that specific judge if you're aware by watching the previous classes that they want you to do A, B, and C.
Showing to that judge prior.
Yes. Absolutely. Use the history. Gather all the information you can. And Ryan talked about camps. Guys, please, and I can't tell you how many families that I sell goats to that are always excited, and it's a good thing that they're going to A, B, or C showmanship camp. And I said, that is absolutely great. The problem is, once they come back, sometimes there's things there that make zero sense that all of a sudden become a priority, and I have to reprogram these kids. And that's not a good thing. And I'm not saying the camps are right or wrong, but we have to realize, just because we went to a camp and what they're telling you to do, just like a judge at a show, that is not written in stone. And again, if it doesn't make logical sense, why do it? I think more self-confidence from the parents, the coaches, the showmen themselves, in understanding that we're going to do whatever we need to do to make that animal look the best. And maybe that's not a traditional showmanship position. Maybe it's something different. To me, I don't care what you're doing to make that animal look good. If you can do it in a manner that doesn't distract me and draw attention to you, let's draw the attention to the animal, look as natural, and make it look as easy as possible. If you're out there fighting to make that animal's top come up, it's kind of like pushing the top down in the lamb ring. Hey, I've got a tight top lamb that pushes his top up, so I'm going to show you that I'm pushing it down and bring out that fault. You got a weak top goat out there and you're fighting to bring that top up all the time and you're down there pinching the belly, all those things. Same thing. If you're working at it, that's not good. If you can get that top line right and I don't notice that you're fighting to do it, that you're working hard to do it, that's a plus. You're not showing me the negative of that animal. So make it look easy. Make that animal look the best they can look effortlessly is the best way for me to put it.
On touching on camps, I'm not going to sign off or condemn a camp on here personally. I think that Dale makes a good point that whatever camp you go to, don't think that is the end all be all, because while I think probably every camp offers a lot of good information, the reason there are different camps is because everybody has different opinions. And I would take knowledge from whichever camp I go to and then use that with what I've already known and seen. But gathering information and knowledge is good, but also knowing when to decipher, maybe this isn't something for me, out of those camps is also very, very good. But if you want my opinion on which camps to go to, like I said, Facebook message me, text me, whatever you want. That's fine. I'll do that there, but I'm not going to do that on here. But to kind of summarize this deal, and one other topic that I'm going to breach very quickly is I know there are a lot of people that sit there and they say, I'll never coach my kid or whatever. And then there's this thing about coaching and showmanship is even more taboo or whatever. I do not care. I'm just telling you right now. Now, if I see if that kid is showing in showmanship and I can tell that that kid is getting signals from somebody or whatever and all this other stuff, is that going to help that kid's cause in winning the showmanship crown that day? Probably not. But all you people that sit there, oh my God, did you see somebody coaching their kid in showmanship? Listen here. I'm just going to put this out there. I don't care who it is. I will coach my kid in showmanship, all this other stuff, because when you are in the finals of a junior national, I will say you get down to the top 10, every single one of them top 10 kids probably got a coach somewhere. Those are just the ones that don't, they're so good at it, and it is so subtle from the kid glancing over and like getting the thumbs up or thumbs down or whatever. You don't know they have a coach, but they do. So y'all can get off your high horse on that shit.
That was perfectly explained, Ryan. Perfectly explained. I have a little pet peeve. And again, I may take longer than you did. I'll try not to. So coaches, parents, we're going to say coaches. That encompasses whoever it may be. Ryan and I talk about getting those kids up to the ring and watching how the mechanics of the ring is going to work. And I can assure you, Mr. Clays and I judged shows back to back a couple weekends ago. His way of working the ring was different than mine. And if I was the second day, some of the kids would maybe assume it's going to be the same as before. And it probably wasn't that much different. But you still, coaches, I'm going to beg for you to take your child by the ear if you have to and make them watch those, whether it's for showmanship, whether it's just the first few classes of the day, whatever it may be. And I think the message is getting out there, Ryan. I'm seeing a few more kids ringside the first few classes and with their coaches, a few. And I went through a four species weekend and I got down to the last day, 3-day show, the last day towards the end of the day before I had somebody come in the ring that was clueless on where they were going or what they were doing.
That's gotta now, be a record.
That is. This stood out to me. Now, that doesn't mean there wasn't somebody that came in third in line, just followed everybody else and had no idea, but they had somebody ahead of them. But there towards the end, I had somebody coming in the ring first, and this he or she came in, and it was as a senior showman, had no idea where they were going, went the wrong way, took the whole line with them, and disrupted the whole movement and mechanics of it. And I'm just looking at this person like, what are you doing? You're not listening to the ring help. You clearly didn't watch any of the classes before. I think I may have made a comment to him, not on the microphone. And the response was, well, I was just doing what we did yesterday. And I get that. I get it. But I promise you, whether it's in showmanship or a regular class, that impression that I get or any judge gets when you come in and you go the wrong, when you have no idea where you're going, it's not positive. It just isn't. So let's just get past that. This is one of those, if you're going to show livestock, this is one of those things you do or you don't show livestock. That's where I'm at. It's an automatic. If you're showing livestock and spending the money to buy the animals, to feed the animals, to get to the show, to do all those things, for the love of God, why would you not try to prepare yourself with something that doesn't take much effort? Just go do it. Just go watch. Ryan, would you please jump on this and explain it to him?
I've tried, and the people don't surrender to me, but I've given up. But yeah, no, I
can. Agree. I'm complimenting the showman. I mean, four species, 3 days, in only one time that I noticed this confusion. I think we're getting better. So I'm going to take that rant and turn it around as this was really positive, actually. This was good. Very good. Yeah. I'm happy with it. What else do we have for this portion?
Oh, no, I think that's the thing. Like I said, I just thought bringing this topic up about coaching, because it is there, and I'm a fan of it. I think it is vital. I think it is necessary, all this other stuff. But I also think there are better ways to do it than some people are. And that's why I thought we'd bring this out. Get a system, have signals, make it subtle, all that. I am going to tell you that being a great showman is an art. Being a great coach is also being an art. And they are out there. And it's just what it is. And so try to be the best artist you can be. There you go.
I love it. Absolutely love it. Use some common sense. If you can coach and do it effectively without distracting from the ring awareness of that showman, and as a showman, if you can take instruction from a coach without the judge even knowing it, or it's very subtle at the worst, that's all great. Don't go to the extreme where that showman is looking at nothing but the coach, where the coach is nonstop trying to make adjustments to where we lose all ring awareness. When that happens, it's starting to form, it forms a very negative opinion in my mind. And whether I want to be negative to that exhibitor and that exhibitor's animal because of it, I'm going to try to avoid that if we're just placing these animals in a show, but it still plays in your subconscious. I promise you that. So be smart about it. Do things for a purpose. I can't explain that enough, not just in the show ring, but in life. There is no reason to go and do something just because somebody else is. Stop, think about it, maybe find a better way that others aren't utilizing, and make it make sense. If I'm going to do A, B, and C, my reasons are E, F, and G. There's a purpose for each thing that we do. And there should be a purpose in the show ring for everything we do with our body, with the movement of that animal, with how we interact with the judge. All of the above should be there. So yes, Ryan, thank you for pushing this topic. I very much enjoyed this one. I think it's good. And you hit some things that are so, so, so important. It is time for question and answer. Do you have a sponsor for question and answer today?
We would like to thank Basic Animal Health for bringing us the question and answer portion of the podcast this week. Basic Animal Health offers a full line of natural support for your livestock. Basic Animal Health's product Show Focus is an all-natural calming and focus supplement formulated to help your animal remain calm and focused while still looking alert and sharp in show ring. Show Focus also offers added responsiveness to handler's cues while encouraging natural movement and Show Focus athletic performance. Show Focus will help you get your cattle, pigs, sheep, or goats to the show the way that you want them to, and by allowing them to focus on you and still look sharp. Basic Animal Health products can be purchased online at www.basicanimalhealth.com. Thank you, Basic Animal Health.
The first question was, I guess, an assist from Clifton, Ryan. He helped us. He sent us this one via text, I believe. Comes from Jim. Love the podcast and appreciate all you guys do for the industry. Ryan, may I please get your mailing address?
No. Actually, if you'll just go on, unless you're sending anthrax, but
roses, maybe.
Oh, God. I hope it's not the flower.
Have you had any lately?
No, no.
Please, listeners, anybody out there that can spare some extra dollar, just send them for no reason, to get to
very
it.
Very creepy. Very creepy. If you will go on the BTRJLA Facebook, there is an address there. And so, voila. But
is that your address?
It doesn't matter. It will get to me eventually.
Ryan, my address is everywhere. It's there. I think
you they're not maybe wanting to send you something. So no, hush.
But I think you should be. If somebody wants to send you a gift or a thank you, that's
you don't know if it could be a pipe bomb.
Understandably. Okay, Jim, you're not getting it, but I think you can find a. I'm sure on the BTR JLA.
BTRJLA Facebook, that address, use that address.
Is it Crockett, Texas?
Yes, it is Crockett, Texas.
Okay, well then maybe it'll get close to him. Maybe.
Oh, Jesus.
The next one comes from Sammy. My daughter is just getting to 4-H age, and I'm struggling what direction she should go regarding the species of livestock to show. Any guidance would be appreciated. That one's pretty open-ended.
Pick whatever species you're the most comfortable with, because an 8-year-old, a 5-year-old, or whatever can show any of them. This is the bullshit that they don't need that cattle are too big for young kid, whatever, all this stuff. No, lies.
I think they should always start with goats. Always.
Of course you do, because you sell goats. Yes, but whatever species, my advice to this parent is whatever species you have the most knowledge in, that is the species you should start your child at. Now, if you don't have any prior knowledge at all on any of the species, then you would need to start with the one that the child is the most interested in.
And I'm going to take it a step further. The one that you have the most background or knowledge in, the one the child may or may not, I guess, be interested in should influence that. But if you have limited knowledge, you probably should start with the species that you have a local breeder, broker, 4-H agent, somebody there that can help you and that has knowledge in that species. So let that guide you. Think about the resources that you have available for assistance. And if there's way more resources to show a hog in your local area, people that can help you or your background lends itself, I think it's logical. Once you get into it for a year or two, and maybe your daughter doesn't want to show hogs anymore, sure, go another direction. But I think once you get back in that circle, you'll have those connections. Well, maybe they do want to show a goat. If I work with this breeder or this person here or there, they're going to help guide me. But I think especially initially, try to find the one species that there is going to be the most assistance for you and your daughter. Sarah, this is not good, Ryan. You can tell I was running late this morning. Dale, I was at the show last weekend. I noticed you pulled cattle to walk from the opposite end that I normally see being done. Can you explain why you do this? I don't like questions addressed to me, and this is one of the first ones I can even remember. But Ryan, I think you can answer this better than me.
Because it's an idiot to do it any other way. Idiotic to do it any other way. When you start at the far end and the people just push their cattle, you don't have to turn them around on top of you. You don't have to cut down half the ring size because they're already on the rail. Yeah, it is because it's the smart thing to do, sir. That is why.
Okay. And I don't know that you and I mean, we've talked about this, but I don't know that you or I made a conscious decision that we were both going to do this. I don't even know how it came to be honest with you. So, and Ryan, I'm going to give a little bit of just ring mechanics. So we have all the cattle pulled in, let's say it's a rear view, and a lot of judges, if the judge is standing behind the cattle on a rear view, a lot of judges are going to go to the left, have those cattle push them all forward to the gate or the fence or the rail, whatever, and then spin off from the left and track behind all the
cuts
cattle and go
the
around.
The ring size in half.
Yeah, and you're going to need ring help. You not always, but ring help is going to be more required, which sometimes we don't have any. And if you have a small ring already, it becomes very, very difficult. So at some point, I don't know when I started doing it or when Ryan started doing it, But I do it all the time now for the most part, unless we're in a very big arena and you got good help and all those things are there. We'll pull from the right. I guess the best way to explain it, just as we would a lamb or goat show. We'll pull from the right if we're standing behind them. And again, it's a seamless transition. They can peel off. They can go. We're using 100% of the ring. I do it because it's more efficient. I do it because I can get a better view of that animal taking up more of the ring space.
No animal looks good getting turned in two
in a really tight circle. Now, if you have a bigger, say at Louisville or somewhere like that, I get it. There's plenty of room. There's plenty of ring help. No problem. No big deal. But those shows that are conducive to doing that are much fewer than they are numerous.
We're talking like 5%.
Yeah, the big
show venues,
national show, and the ring, the cattle ring that I had at the show in Idaho, it's probably large enough. I didn't need to, but I can assure you that these jackpot shows, they're always going to be short on staff, and it's hard to get enough ring help. All of those things, it just allows the flow to go easier. And I'm sure, Ryan, that I know when I do it, and I haven't been in that area before judging, or they haven't seen me judge cattle before, you know, they're looking at you like, you dumbass.
I don't care what they're looking at.
I don't either. I used to explain what I'm doing, but I just don't anymore. And I hope once it happens and once they see that it does flow better, that it makes sense. And again, I'm all about understanding what needs to be done. And I'm going to get on here and we're going to talk about animals being lined up on the op, making kids show to you, the judge on the off show side, things that I get very angry about. Maybe some would look at this the same way. The tradition is to do it the other way. I get it. But in certain circumstances, again, I'm going to go back. Let's do everything for a purpose, whether it's in the show ring or in life. Do it for a purpose. And in the traditional manner in today's jackpot shows or county fairs or anything other than the really large venues, it just doesn't work as well. And that's just an opinion. So don't take it for what it is. But Sarah, that is why that I did that. And I'm going to guess, and I don't know this, that Mr. Clay's did it in a traditional manner. So especially if you had him one day and my sorting the next day or whatever, it was different, and it just is. So hopefully that answers. Hopefully everybody understands that has watched Ryan or I sort cattle at a jackpot show or a county show or wherever it may be, that it does maybe catch that individual a little bit off that while we normally come from the other side. But hopefully it's all good. With that said, Ryan, this was good. I'm glad that you're preparing. I hope you're mentally preparing, and I don't mean by alcohol, for you and Callie's shark dive later today. I hope that Chase and I are able to join you next week from Namibia. I cannot promise you that, but just in case, Ryan, you may want to have a solo thought, topic, idea, whatever it may be. Maybe Clifton will come on with you, but he seems very busy lately. Very, very busy. So anyway, thank you very much for listening. Until next week, be safe.
Y'all come back now, you hear?